Their horses were of great stature, strong and clean-limbed. Their gray coats glistened, their long tails flowed in the wind, their manes were braided on their proud necks. The men that rode them matched them well, tall and long-limbed. Their hair, flaxen pale, flowed under their light helms and streamed in long braids behind them. Their faces were stern and keen. In their hands were tall spears of ash. Painted shields were slung at their backs. Long swords were at their belts. Their burnished shirts of mail hung down upon their knees. Welcome to a sacred fellowship where we are reading the works of J.R.R. Tolkien using sacred reading practices. We are using these texts to learn, to reflect on our lives, and to think about life's big questions. We believe that through treating classics like The Lord of the Rings as sacred, we will learn to treat one another as sacred. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Lorianne. This is episode 47. I did not just time travel, where your hosts, Catherine Olson and Lorianne Schwenk, will be discussing the second chapter in The Treason of Isengard, The Riders of Rohan, through the theme of hospitality. Take a seat by the fire under this happy tree, or settle in your car seat and join us. Reading in community is an essential part of what it means for us to treat a text as sacred. And we're glad we are here to continue building community with us.
Thank you so much for that introduction. And how are you, Catherine? Do you have a dungeon or a tower this week? Let's catch up.
My dungeon is that I'm just feeling more than a little bit discouraged. It's been a hard weekend and it's been a hard morning. But on the other hand, this morning, I had a tower. My mother's 70th birthday is coming up in 2 months, and she decided she would do a recital for the occasion, as she's done for her 50th birthday as well. And she asked me to do a duet of the 7th Symphony Adagio movement by Beethoven.
Ooh, dum, 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 dum.
Yes.
Da, 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 da. I hope
it's
I can zoom in.
It's one of our favorites.
It's one of my favorites, and I hope I can zoom in. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love that movement. Wonderful. Oh, good.
What about you?
So my dungeon is that my husband is away for the week. Mm. And my tower is that my husband is away for the week. So I get to choose what I'm watching. And I really feel like watching Fellowship again. And I can do that without having to stay up past his bedtime. So as soon as you and I are done, that is getting queued up and I'm watching it again. And this time without you and I taking notes and chatting and stuff like that. So I am just going to be watching the film the second time in 2 weeks or something like that. So I'm excited to do that again and see what else I catch and to just enjoy it right now, just as a film and all of that. So that's my tower for this week.
Mm-hmm.
And then this week, our theme for the chapter is hospitality, which is so interesting because they're on the road and they're not at home. So it'll be fun to really look for that. And so that made me think about a time when I was on the road and experienced hospitality. And I think it was like 2008, I took a trip by myself from Colorado and I wanted to go to Stinson Beach. So I went to Stinson Beach and I stayed at the Stinson Beach Motel by myself. And I got to talk to the proprietor and I really enjoyed meeting him. And he offered great hospitality. And then in 2009, a really good friend died.
Mm.
And I think all of us in our lives have that one death that really changes everything, where just about everything is meaningless and you have to turn this huge corner and find new meaning and find new ways of doing the things you thought you knew how to do. Everything just shifted. And just about a month after he died, I needed to go to the ocean. And so I got out to California again and was staying with friends in the Sacramento area. And then one day I rented a car and drove to Stinson Beach so I could have a night at Stinson Beach. And I called up and the proprietor remembered me.
Mm.
And I think I may have had 2 nights even. And he remembered, and I got my favorite room. And he just went above and beyond. And what's really sweet is that the hotel's now gone, but I had to search him out because his name is Frodo. So So I thought this story would be appropriate for this. And I actually found him last night and I've welcomed him into the fellowship. So hopefully he'll listen and he'll hear this story, because I know as someone who works at a hotel, I have tons of guests and I try to offer them hospitality, but I never know how much it means. And it was so nice to be able to thank Frodo last night. It's fun to say even. And he was born with the name too. So I actually know someone who was born and named Elrond and someone who was born and named Frodo. So, and I am Lorianne. So it was really great to be able to thank him. And we've talked about the good guest, and it was nice 11 years later to be able to really return the kindness of his hospitality. So that that really came to mind, that there can be hospitality even when you're on the road. And I'm looking forward to finding that in the chapter. Do we want to do the theme first, or do we want to talk about the gammers? Because the gammers have a lot today.
Well, the gammers are probably chomping at the bit to give you
a horsey
equestrian joke to yes. start off with. So let's let them have their say first.
Okay. So they didn't even bother with hospitality because this is our 57th time on that theme. So they
imagine why.
Yeah, I didn't even go with that. But they were very excited when the three hunters make it out to the plains, and Legolas makes some comment about the greenness, and he is so refreshed by being out in this beautiful plain. And so the gammers.
Gandorian bombers.
Yeah, right. Don't even tempt me. So the gammers wanted us all to know the word viriditas, and that's Latin, but the gammers are smart. So viriditas was a word created 1,000 years ago by a woman named Hildegard of Bingen. And if you don't know Hildegard, she was born in 1098 and lived until 1179. So she had a good long life. And she was speaking some of this Proto-Germanic that so influenced Tolkien. But of course, she, as a church lady, also knew her Latin. So she created this word viriditas, which bluntly means green and truth, kind of mm-hmm. as a portmanteau, kind of smushed together. But what she really meant was the greening power of the divine, a divine healing power. And she wrote the medical textbook of her day. So she knew all about athelos or whatever herb or anything else. She wrote the standard text. And what's cool is that we're finding out a lot of what she wrote about was still works. Mm-hmm. And it means vigor, verdure, which also has greenness in it, freshness. And really it is how you find heaven or an expression of the divine on earth. So she really believed that you weren't supposed to suffer in this life and then get a reward. You were actually meant to live a life that would have reward in it, in with the suffering. And so I see Legolas with this expression of viriditas here. And I love that. And then I asked them about downs again, and they said, "You silly girl, we had downs before with the barrow lights. They're the chalky hills." So I thought maybe other people might have forgotten. Round chalky hills, and they're covered with grass. There's usually not a lot of trees on them. They're lower elevation than that. And so it's like our word dune. So it's related mm-hmm. to that. And they talk about, the three hunters talk about how many leagues they have gone. So I looked that up and I thought that was interesting, because the gammer said it's 3 statute miles or 1 hour's walk. And that clocks. I did an hour long walk today, which is only 2 miles, but I stopped to pet all the dogs. So I did not walk a league, but I walked an hour. So, and then a statute mile is our English system of 5280 feet, but the Roman mile, it's interesting, is 1,000 paces. Works out to be about 1,600 yards, and I haven't multiplied by that by 3 to see if that fits with about
4,800 feet.
About 4,800. So at any rate, it's a little shy of the 5280 feet, which is the statute mile. But it's nice that, so a league is not set in stone per se. It is an old term, really, for about an hour's walk. So that was helpful for me. And then early in the chapter, there's the word read, R-E-D-E, and it is Old English for counsel and advice, Proto-Germanic for help and advantage. And R-E-A-D originally meant to advise or to get a reading on something, to really get advice or counsel from something. So that was one of the rich words there. And then there's a mention of Dwimmer. I think that's the writers. They're talking about the...
They describe Saruman as being Dwimmer crafty, which is one of my favorite words in the chapter.
It is absolutely one of mine as well. The Old English is Gedwimmer, Gedwimmer, illusion, delusion, slight, magic, sorcery, spells. And there's also the use of the word fell, which can be a rocky hill. It is from the Norse and the Proto-Germanic, Fialus, Felsam. And there is still the highest peak in England is Scafell Pike. So I wanted to point that out. Fell can also mean cruel and fierce and vicious. And it comes to us through felon and villain. So the Gammers wanted us to have both of those meanings. So there, that ends the lesson from the Gammers of Gondor.
I'm delighted by that because I really think of Hildegard von Bingen as the musician and composer, not as so much as the writer or word crafter.
And physician, healer. Mm-hmm. She basically was so mentally well and spiritually strong that she was basically the encyclopedia of everything. I have sung her music. I have used her medical advice. I have read her spiritual writings. She's just the whole package. So I love it. So where in this amazing, painful, hard chapter, just I feel for the three. Oh my goodness. Where did you find hospitality?
Well, I do have to say that it was occasionally a little bit of a struggle for me to find instances of hospitality. And honestly, part of what I noticed was that there is this progressive search or questing for an understanding of what is going on in the land, because they have all of these signs of what has happened with the orcs, and they have the sign of how they're received by the Riders of Rohan. But for me, there is towards the beginning of the chapter, the second paragraph, and in fact, there in the still cool hour before dawn, they rested for a brief space. The moon had gone down before them, the stars glittered above them. The first light of day had not yet come over the dark hills behind. For the moment, Aragorn was at a loss. The orc trail had descended into the valley, but there it had vanished. "Which way would they turn, do you think?" said Legolas. "Northward to take a straighter road to Isengard or Fangorn, if that is their aim, as you guess. Or southward to strike at the Entwash." "They will not make for the river, whatever mark they aim at," said Aragorn. "And unless there is much amiss in Rohan and the power of Saruman is greatly increased, they will take the shortest way that they can find over the fields of the Rohirrim. Let us search northwards." And so for me, this really points to the fact that they are not only looking for hospitality for themselves, but they are trying to discern what reception the orcs and, well, we find out specifically what kind of orcs in the next chapter, but what kind of reception they would have received in this place. Mm-hmm. How about you?
Okay. And actually you just helped me again, because I was telling you before we started how I struggle with landscape and geography. There's two mountain ranges, it sounds like, or a mountain range that has a dale in between. They're going to travel up the dale. It's trying to figure out the northward when both Fangorn and Isengard are not north. So I was trying to understand that. So when you read it out loud, I could finally picture that. So thank you. I just wanted to say that right in the first paragraph, it's not hospitality, but I love the line, "The waxing moon was riding in the west." Just beautiful. Just notice that. And I love that you found hospitality there. And sometimes the theme is about the lack of it. I think for me, I don't know if this is hospitality or the lack, when Aragorn cries, "Gondor, Gondor, would that I looked on you again in happier hour." I think he's craving it. And so he knows he will find it when he gets there, and he wants it. So it's not time to go there yet, but he knows, he thinks of that as a place of hospitality. He's been there before, and he hopes to be there again in a happier hour.
That actually reminds me of when he is in the first chapter of this book. He is crying out as he's racing down the hill and crying Elendil, Elendil, so that Boromir, who has called for aid on the Horn of Gondor, is able to hear that he is not yet abandoned. And in a similar vein, Aragorn has pledged to go to Gondor to help the people who are trying to stand against the might of Sauron at the easternmost border, really, before you get to Mordor. And it's a similar invocation that he has longed to go there, but he is also aware that he needs to assure anyone who might be listening or anyone who might kind of need this indication that they are not forgotten and they are going to be his priority as soon as he has fulfilled this part of his quest.
Right. And I get the sense he may even have been reminding himself. And he knows he can't do that thing that he might want, I won't even say selfishly, but personally to do. He is bound to something and he keeps his promises. Yeah, I think for me, for me, that was really the first in the chapter for me was, the green smell. So that Viriditas moment.
Yes, I marked that as well.
In the chapter, right.
Calls to mind, it's a lovely thing that Legolas took a deep breath, like one drinks a great draught after long thirst in barren places. The green smell, he said, it is better than much sleep, let us run. And in The Hobbit, as they're coming into Rivendell, which is famously a place of the elf kind, Frodo says, Bilbo says, it smells like elves.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of not exactly supernatural, but instinctive connection between two things that are living and wholesome.
Beautiful. I love that. I love that. And then maybe that smell is, in a way, even a sense of home for Legolas in this moment, and it gives him strength and he's off again.
Yes.
I think for me, the next is the whole long piece, We Have Come at Last to a Hard Choice, where, again, I have it in my margin, A-L-G-L-G-L-A-G-A. They're giving hospitality to the process of making a decision. And maybe I'm working too hard to find it in the chapter, but I just appreciate how it's no one's, ego determining this. Nobody's being a bully. No one's interrupting each other. They are discussing the signs, discussing what they know. Everybody gets a voice, very equally distributed. And in the end, they say they will do what Aragorn chooses. And he says he is an ill chooser, but they will continue in the daylight and rest in the dark. So I really appreciate the hospitality given and the time given to that decision that needed to be made.
Well, for me, it's a little bit before that. And this is almost a transient hospitality, for lack of a better term, but
there's a lot of that.
As they are all strangers in this strange land, they find this elven brooch lying on the ground. And it says, "Not idly do the leaves of Lorien fall," said Aragorn. And so I feel as though the person who have let this fall is trying to create a sign of something familiar for those who he knows are looking for it.
I love it. Yes.
Okay.
And he even guesses it's Pippin because the footsteps are smaller.
Yes. Pippin, so, and yes. I have dainty feet.
What was next for you then?
For me, it is when they're still looking for signs of where to go to find the companions. "Come, we must go," he said, this being Aragorn. "The scent is growing cold. But it is still dark," said Gimli. "Even Legolas on the hilltop could not see them till the sun is up." "I fear they have passed beyond my sight from hill or plain, under moon or sun," said Legolas. "Where sight fails, the earth may bring us rumor," said Aragorn. "The land must groan under their hated feet." So I feel like Aragorn is trusting a lot to the land itself, to the really the valley into which they have come. And that seems like a very Strider thing to do, not just because he's a ranger, but something where he is able to travel so far and wide and is able to discern such things because he has this relationship between himself and between things that grow.
And that's kind of a little of what I was hinting at in the second breakfast I wrote about Aragorn as deer. He is so attuned to all of his creation that he can hear the earth groan under their hated feet. And he even, is this when he also mentions that he had heard the horses? Yes, he can also hear the hoofs of horses. Mm-hmm. So he is that attuned because it is all alive to him, I think, and all his kin. And I love that, yes. And then I like the description of the Rohirrim.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a description of hospitality. The horse lords had formerly kept many herds and studs in the Eastemnet. I have to say that carefully, Eastemnet. So there's the dwellings are normally far away, but that this was a place where the Rohirrim normally find hospitality, and yet there's no one here. There's been no sign of beast or man. And then there's a place of not hospitality. I think it's so chilling. They all express this weariness. And there's some will that lends speed to our foes and sets an unseen barrier before us, a weariness that is in the heart more than in the limb. That's Aragorn, and Legolas says the same, and Gimli says the same. And talk about Gimli being bent, and that his heart hurts here. And there, I think that is important to note, there's this opposite of hospitality, and almost as though there were some force working against them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there actually is. And,
I definitely agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Plus, I don't think Tolkien ever hints at this sort of thing without it being completely intentional about, no, that is what you are actually perceiving. It's not in your imagination.
Right. So I was hearing that. And then next is when Legolas provides the hospitality. He's not going to sleep, but he's going to let Aragorn and Gimli sleep.
That's actually where I was thinking of Legolas and his relation to the scene in Fellowship of the Ring with Gildor and with the Wood Elves that Frodo and Sam meet, because whenever they awoke, they saw Legolas standing behind them or walking to and fro, singing softly to himself in his own tongue.
Yeah.
And as he sang, the white stars opened in the hard black vault above. And so in Fellowship of the Ring, we have the incantation to Elbereth Gothoniel and the references to Varda, who is literally the star kindler. And so this is really him creating the similar safe space as that which Gildor did in the first book, but it's all related to his invocation of the starlight that is sacred to the elves.
What a gift.
Wish I had something even close to that.
I know. And that's where he says, read, oft is found at the rising of the sun. They will read more signs in the morning. So, and then what was your next place?
Oh, well, it's a combination of two parts. It's when Aragorn... Well, there is a silence in the empty fields, and Gimli could hear the air moving in the grass. And by comparison, we have riders, cried Aragorn, springing to his feet. Many riders on swift steeds are coming toward us. Yes, said Legolas, there were 105. Yellow is their hair and brighter their spears. Their leader is very tall. And then they say, I'm weary and our hunt has failed, or at least others were before us, for these horsemen are riding back down the Orc trail. We may get news from them. Or spears, said Gimli.
Or spears, right.
And indeed, when they get into Aragorn's cry of, what news from the north, riders of Rohan? Without a word or cry, suddenly the riders halted. A thicket of spears were pointed towards the strangers, and some of the horsemen had bows in hand, and their arrows were already fitted to the string.
Yep.
So I think Gimli is a little bit... more savvy than we really realize at first.
At first, right. And I didn't actually think of him as just sort of whining or anything like that. He had a realistic expectation of what might happen.
I think it was also honoring the perception that they had earlier of there's some strange magic in this land that sets or lends speed to our foes and sets up an unseen barrier against us. Mm-hmm. And so Gimli is responding to, well, if that's true, there is probably not going to be a warm welcome here for us.
Right, right. Not going to you be were saying? Hospitality. Oh, I was just going to comment on Legolas having such wonderful sight, because if you are a wood person, your horizons aren't very far. Mm-hmm. And yet he does have this gift out in open spaces to see very far. So I love that adaptability for him, that he's not limited by being a wood person, wood elf. And then we start to see, I love how the hospitality starts to blossom between Amr and the three. And it is, of course, at first not there. But then he agrees to hear their tale. And then he refers to the past when we welcomed guests kindly. And then when Aragorn reveals himself, Amir is properly appreciative of what has just happened. And then he even is open to learning new things about things he's never heard of. He's never heard of hobbits. He's never heard of people visiting the Golden Lady and surviving. And yet he's not closed off to that, as you know, he doesn't necessarily believe them at first, but he at least has this open mind. So he goes on this beautiful arc relatively quickly. Do you have more? Please say more about that.
Oh, I just completely agree with you, but I keep on slightly snickering to myself because of this arc that begins with him and Gimli basically threatening to behead each other. And then they eventually evolves into, well, now that we have a proper context, but I love that he gives Gimli, gives all of them a little bit of a lesson in manners with, why do you not speak, silent ones, he demanded. Gimli rose and planted his feet firmly apart. His hand gripped the handle of his axe and his dark eyes flashed. Give me your name, horse master, and I will give you mine and more besides, he said. As for that, said the rider, staring down at the dwarf, the stranger should declare himself first. And I feel like Gimli should really remember that, as he is Glowin's son, and Glowin was one of the people at Bilbo's service. Mm-hmm. So Gimli should know better, but I think that it's lovely that all of these things that they have as instinctive first responses to each other are erased once they're able to determine that they are both opposed to a single enemy.
Right, right. So that is powerful. Love that. And I love how we hear how Gandalf isn't necessarily a good name to mention. And then their grief at Boromir's death.
Yeah,
that's sad. So, you know, this is a neighboring kingdom, but they mourn that loss. Amr does. He mourns that loss. Ethan is a pill. But our Ethan.
Okay, sorry. I was like, who's Ethan? Sorry. Anyway. I'm sorry, bad connection sometimes makes things. But with the mourning of Boromir, you mentioned this, that there's a bordering country of Gondor. And in fact, you had asked me a little bit before we started today what the relationship is exactly between Gondor and Rohan. And it's a fact that Rohan used to be part of the kingdom of Gondor. And so this, in part, informs and elaborates on why Amr has such respect for Aragorn once he discovers that he's the heir of Elendil. So Rohan, of course, received its independence, and the word for the Rohirrim is actually a Gondorian word, where they actually call themselves Eorlingus, which derives from their ancestor Eorl, which in Old English is the word for noble, which is also where we in modern English get the word earl. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there is a, still, in spite of them being two separate kingdoms at this point, with Theoden obviously over the realm of Rohan, and then we have the stewards of Gondor awaiting the return of the king. Mm-hmm. They have what is called friendship and alliance at call and at need. So if Gondor calls for aid, Rohan is bound to answer.
So there's hospitality in a way as well.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Appreciate that. Then where was your next?
Sorry, instance? I'm finding my... I referenced several of my things in that whirlwind of a discussion about it, like Éomer and Gimli. Let's see.
I love Wingfoot, I name you, but go ahead, you go first. Yes. Yes.
Okay, so with Gimli and with Éomer, we have his kind of, he's trying to get, and Éomer first asks them multiple times to explain their errand or to give context for their presence in this land. And then Gimli says, "Then you do not pay tribute to Sauron?" "We do not, and we never have," said Éomer with a flash of his eyes, "though it comes to my ears that that lie has been told. Mm. Some years ago, the Lord of the Black Land wished to purchase horses of us and get great price, but we refused him, for he puts beasts to evil use. But at this time, our chief concern is with Saruman. He has claimed lordship over all this land, and there has been war between us for many more months. He has taken orcs into his service and wolf riders and evil men, and he has closed a gap against us, so that we are likely to be beset both east and west. It is ill dealing with such a foe, he is a wizard and both cunning and wimmer crafty," mm-hmm. using that word again, "having many guises." And so this is a moment for me where this is the antithesis of a hospitality. Oh. Saruman, who is not Gondorian, not Rohirrim, he has no dominion rightfully over this land, yet he has claimed to power over and lordship over all these lands. And he has all of this evil use to which he is putting things that are not in any way his right.
Mm.
So that's where I found it next, sort of.
Sort of, right. Yes. Finding it and finding a lack of it is the same. Well, leaving them a little bit aside, well, no, I think the close of their conversation there, where Éomer was silent for a moment, then he spoke, "We both have need of haste," and then he offers the horses and just says, "Please bring them. I you know, believe in your good faith, do not fail." Aragorn says, "I will not." And I love that. I just love that they have come to real hospitality now. And then I, "Farewell, and may you find what you seek. Return with what speed you may, and let our swords hereafter shine together." Mm-hmm. So there's the kind of the closure of his arc there, and how beautiful that is. And Gimli says, "The matter of the Lady Galadriel lies still between us." And I love that, because he's a dwarf. Legolas would be the one who would have something to say. But Gimli is...
"I have yet to teach you gentle speech."
Right. Gimli is enthralled. He is still just under her spell in the best way. And then there's... the fun place then next, when they have reached the forest and they're going to rest for that evening and they're going to build a fire. And I love that Gimli takes over there and he performs these acts of hospitality, and Aragorn gets to sit and rest and think and whatever, but that he's the host now, and he's providing the hospitality in the spot where Legolas had kind of done it the night before. And then the tree actually enjoys the fire. And we get this sense of the tree leaning forward with its leaves and enjoying the hospitality of this fire. And I loved that. It's our first indication that we're in a very different kind of forest.
And I had mentioned earlier about Gimli being Glóin's son, and so he has a certain legacy to be uphold. And it's actually you mentioning that if Gimli is the one to take charge of building the fire, it says in The Hobbit in the chapter 6, after they have just escaped the
cave,
Yes, the cave into the Borgs afterwards, that it, Owen and Glowinder are the ones who had tinder boxes packed for the journey. Nice. So of course Gimli, who is Glowin's son, is going to be the one with knowledge of how to make a fire in the wilds.
Very nice. Thank you for making that connection. Thank you. And then there is this so strange moment where Gimli looks up, and there on the edge of the firelight is an old bent man leaning on a staff, and his movement is enough to wake up Aragorn and Legolas. And I love Aragorn saying, "Well, Father, what can we do for you?" An immediate offer of hospitality from three people who are sleeping on the ground and have, what do they have to offer? But they offer their warmth of the fire.
Yes.
And I just love that. And it is so strange and so disturbing. And this creature, this man disappears. But what a story. And then their horses disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Oops.
I have to admit that the first time I read this, my skin crawled, and hearing you read it, my hairs on the back of my neck stood up on end, even though I know exactly what this is all about. But
Right. Well, I think that's when I read this chapter, that's when I felt like I had to read several more immediately.
Exactly.
It was so creepy and so weird and so strange, and then also so hopeful.
So uncanny.
And uncanny. Right. Here's Dwimmercraft at work. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Were there any other instances that I skipped over for you?
I'm trying to make sure that I don't have any that are coming up in our sacred practice. Nope, that was it for me.
Well, wonderful. So you have the passage this week for our Lectio Divina. So will you?
Yes, and I just need to pull it up for a second.
Absolutely. I don't know where you're starting, or I guess I know where you're starting, maybe, but it will be new to me. So I'll be with all the listeners. We've had some silence, but we're still here.
Yes, okay. Because it's the suspense from this chapter. It just lends itself to it. "We do not speak of dwarves or children," said Gimli. "Our friends were hobbits." "Hobbits," said Éomer, "and what may they be?" "It is a strange name." "A strange name for a strange folk," said Gimli, "but these were very dear to us. It seems that you have heard in Rohan of the words that troubled Minas Tirith. They spoke of the halfling. These hobbits are halflings." "Halflings," laughed the rider that stood beside Éomer. "Halflings, but they are only a little people in old songs and children's tales out of the north. Do we walk in legends or on the green earth in the daylight?" "A man may do both," said Aragorn, "for not we, but those who come after will make the legends of our time."
Ooh.
So what stood out to you in that?
I think it had not sunk in that it is Gimli who speaks up. Mm-hmm. So I think just that phrase, "We do not speak of dwarves or children," said Gimli, "our friends were hobbits." And then he continues to explain, you know, "a strange name for strange folk, but these were very dear to us."
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's my answer. These were very dear to us.
Yes.
Definitely. How about you?
"Do we walk in legends?"
Mm.
I think for me, it's actually in conversation with what you just observed, the bit about "these were very dear to us." Gimli names them to be a strange folk, and it's a strange name, but it is something where they walk in legends. They are participating in things that are unknown to them, but it causes them to be connected and to find a way to love that which they do not know fully yet.
Lovely. Well, would you like me to read it? And then this time we'll listen for something that's speaking to us.
Yes, please.
Okay. "We do not speak of dwarves or children," said Gimli. "Our friends were hobbits." "Hobbits," said Éomer. "And what may they be? It is a strange name." "A strange name for a strange folk," said Gimli. "But these were very dear to us. It seems that you have heard in Rohan of words that troubled Minas Tirith. They spoke of the halfling. These hobbits are halflings." "Halflings," laughed the rider that stood beside Éomer. halflings, but they are only a little people in old songs and children's tales out of the north. Do we walk in legends or on the green earth in the daylight? A man may do both, said Aragorn, for not we, but those who come after will make the legends of our time. Ooh. How did that speak to you?
Oh, for not we, but those who come after will make the legends of our time. Really, it speaks to me in terms of the responsibility of foresight and understanding that we need to be to bear in mind consequences when we choose to make actions. How about you?
For me, it called to me to remember to look between the lines of stories. That's why we have the Gammers of Gondor. They're not actual characters, but you know, there's women in these worlds, and they have things to do, so we get to do that. So I love in sacred reading also reading the things that might seem to be legend but are actually real people who are living real lives, eating food, sleeping, making love, making homes, that their stories are not necessarily the center of this, but to listen for it and not toss it on the bin heap of legend and myth, or laugh at it even, to say that these voices still deserve to be heard. And then I am always called to remember or think on, who am I not listening to now? Who am I ignoring or not hearing? So I think that's always something for me to pay attention to, and this really speaks to that. Anything more for you from this passage?
Not at the moment.
Beautiful. Then I believe we go on to our exhortations for characters.
How about you go first this time?
Well, I think I would counsel these riders, these Aerlings, not to be so hasty to judge and decide, and to just be open, be more open, and to admire their leader there, here, this head of their, Aered? this clan, or this particular group of riders. This leader has shown such an amazing ability to, as quickly as they stopped their forward motion and circled the three, I'm struggling with names. Amr was able to pivot as well in his opinions and his stereotype and look at things in a new way and really listen. So I want to admonish anybody to be like him. How about you?
I think I would exhort people who are in any kind of group situation where they have to rely on each other's gifts to be as aware of individual strengths as the three hunters are in this. Where Gimli has his power of fire, Aragorn has his power of discernment. Éomer is not one of the three hunters. Legolas is the one kindling the stars.
Yes, yes. Beautiful. So keep leaving feedback wherever you listen, or you can email us at asacredfellowship@gmail.com, or you can comment on our webpage, which is asacredfellowship.com. And keep leading comments, because we are going to choose, we're going to have a drawing to celebrate episode 50, which is coming up very soon. So keep leaving us that feedback. And next week, our theme will be hope for chapter 3, the Uruk-hai. And I can't wait to talk about that already. as I forget which team in Chicago, as their broadcaster used to say, it's a beautiful day, let's play too. Should we do another recording right after this one? No. Okay. And now, shall we have our notes from the Shire?
Yes, I do want to introduce this by saying that we are aware that this weekend is Easter for many of the Christian denominations. But before we do our note from the Shire, I would like to wish all of our friends in the Jewish tradition a Chag Pesach Sameach. So happy Passover. I hope I did the Hebrew justice. I got it off of my friend's comments to me recently, but my Hebrew is a little bit rusty since I took it in college. But
I'll
since
sing
it
Dianu
is Easter
for you, if you'd like. Dianu. Okay.
Anyway, so we were I was talking earlier about a note I had found in Tolkien's essay, which is also a letter written to C.S. Lewis, in which he talks about something very specific. And I would actually like to invite you, Lorianne, to read what you had found about the term spibbony for anyone who has heard of the Prancing Pony podcast, or shall prove but mine instrument for
shall
everyone else.
Shall prove but mine instrument, spibbony. And this comes as a line from the Silmarillion. And thou, Melkor, shalt see that no theme may be played that hath not its uttermost source in me, nor can any alter the music in my despite. For he that attempteth this shall prove but mine instrument in the devising of things more wonderful, which he himself hath not imagined. This is a central theme that runs throughout, and I am keeping my eye open for it as I am reading. And it really struck me as something that is central to the Abrahamic faiths and in this very holy week of Passover and Holy Week for Christians. And I know the Orthodox are, I believe, a week later. So this podcast, of course, will be around for that as well. So I think that is a very important theological consideration as well. And so can you tell us a little bit of Tolkien's thoughts where this comes into play?
Well, to put it into context, Melkor is also later named Morgoth, so that we know him as really the great enemy within the legendarium of Middle Earth. And so the allegation, and this is where I would actually use allegation in a positive note, that everything that it has been done, including the works of Melkor or Morgoth, is something that has furthered the righteous cause of the creator is a powerful idea. But in this essay called it On Fairy Stories, Tolkien says, I would venture to say that the approaching the Christian story from this direction, it has long been my feeling, a joyous feeling, that God redeems the corrupt making creatures, men, in a way fitting to this aspect, as to others, of their strange natures. The Gospels contain a fairy story, or a story of a larger kind which embraces all the essence of fairy stories. They contain many marvels, peculiarly artistic, beautiful, and moving, mythical in their perfect self-contained significance. And among the marvels is the greatest and most complete conceivable eucatastrophe. But this story that has entered history ends in the primary world. The desire and aspiration of sub-creation has been raised to the fulfillment of creation. The birth of Christ is the eucatastrophe of man's history. The resurrection is the eucatastrophe of the story of the incarnation. This story begins and ends in joy. It has preeminently the inner consistency of reality. So in this week, as we are celebrating Easter and Passover, we remember that God's plan for mankind is always one that begins and ends in joy. And that the resurrection that we are to expect and that we are celebrating this week is one that shall prove but the instrument of God.
Well done.
And now I'm going to step away from my pulpit for a little while.
Thank you. I think that's the end then. And so I'll say, may Elbereth protect you.
And be of good hope. Namarie.
Namarie.